Momentum Men is brought to you by ReUp, the creators of resources to disciple men like Jesus did, educating, encouraging, and empowering men to grow in Christ and disciple others, featuring a platform filled with men's Bible studies for individuals or groups. Men, living by His life. Learn more at reuppodcast.com. ReUp, proud sponsor of Momentum Australia.
You're listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life.
The best scenarios in our family or in our workplace, at church with our brothers and sisters in Christ, they can see it in us and recognize it and ask those questions around how you're doing. You seem a bit anxious. I've noticed you're getting much more focused and driven. And then we can call each other out on it in a really good way, and we can even make light of it.
Now, here's your hosts, Tim and Des.
Okay, well, welcome to this week's Momentum. It is so good to have you tuning in wherever you are around Australia. And look, if you're listening on the podcast, wherever you might be around the world as well, which is pretty cool. MomentumAustralia.org is our website if you'd like to find out a bit more about who we are as an organization. And of course, me, Tim, and Des, who I'm about to introduce in just a moment, who, we lead this thing, and just so thrilled to do so because we just have a heart for you to succeed in life, guys. We want you to step up and step into all that God has for you. And if we can help you do that, get onto our website and have a look at a bunch of resources, MomentumAustralia.org. Without further ado, let's introduce my good friend and co-host, Des. How are you this week, man?
I'm good, really good. Isn't it amazing? We're still alive and kicking, and it's really good. Guys, don't forget the Momentum Caroline. We say it every week, 1-800-000-MEN, 1-800-000-636, provided by our good friends at Caroline Connections. You can reach out to them if you're doing life alone and you're struggling and you don't want to talk to family or whatever. Reach out to that Caroline 7 days a week, 9 a.m. to 11 p.m., 1-800-000-MEN. But also our YouTube channel, Momentum for Men on YouTube, weekly show. So not only can you hear us, but you actually can see us. It's really cool. It's really exciting.
It is. And I encourage you just to subscribe, like, all of those things. It's just other ways of you getting content and getting what we're saying here at Momentum. And look, you know, people prefer the visual thing, Des, right? So, I mean, you and I are made for radio, visually.
Me in particular, yeah.
If that doesn't put people off, look, watching is sometimes more entertaining than than listening. True. So engage with that, the YouTube channel, Momentum for Men. You know, recent stats from Beyond Blue show that as many as 3 million Australians thereabouts are currently living with some form of anxiety. And estimates are that 1 in 4 people will experience anxiety at some stage in their life. And that makes anxiety, can you believe, the most common mental health condition in Australia, Des.
Isn't that amazing? And given what the world's going through in the last few years, you know, with COVID and the state of the economy and the state of the world, it's really not surprising that many would be struggling with anxiety or at least feel uncertain about their future.
Yeah. And, you know, as we start a new year, there are a number of factors that can, I suppose, contribute around this sense of anxiety, the unknown of what this year may hold. One of them also may be our surroundings too. And today, we're going to specifically look at the relationship between anxiety and the church. And to explore this, we're joined once again by the CEO of AIFC and our good friend here at Momentum, Nick Marks. Welcome back to Momentum, Nick.
Hello, Tim, and hello, Des, and hello, listeners. It's great to be back 2024, as Des said, alive and kicking and with fellow radio heads.
You guys make me feel like we're so old, like we're about to kick the bucket. I mean, what's this? We're still alive. We just made it into 2024.
Exactly.
Was 2023 that bad? Well, look, just quickly, the AAFC website, which we will just give you so you can check out at some stage, because talking of resources, there is a whole bunch of stuff on their website. That's aifc.com.au, aifc.com.au. And Nick, we've talked with you about anxiety before. We had a couple of shows last year, I think, with you on anxiety. I mean, it is a big thing, as we've talked about, and we've just introed there. I mean, it affects a lot of people. Before we get into our topic, let's just quickly start with the year coming off the back of 2023, Christmas, New Year. We're into a new year. I mean, is this generally a time of year where people can have a heightened sense of anxiety as we step into something new and unknown?
Yeah, it certainly can be for some people, and how we look out into the year and how we look into the future, and that's often based on experiences of the past where we will, you know, start to script our anticipated future, and maybe we'll get into some of that today. But it's certainly not uncommon, and as you touched on, Tim, it's been increasing, and particularly in our young people, which, you know, when you're young, you do look up in and out into the future in a very different way. And so we want our young people to be looking, you know, onwards and upwards, as you said when you called out the guys earlier, is with a hope and a future. And anxiety really can rob us of that, because it's really about showing up in our body and our mind worrying about the future with perhaps a sense of dread or a future focus of, well, what if this happens and what if that happens? And it can be a debilitating thing for us if we don't have some of the tools to deal with it. And people around us is a really important one as well. And so, yeah, we want to be able to look out into the new year with some hope. Hard things are still going to come at us for sure. And there will be times of anxiety that we don't want it to be, and there's things we can do about it, to be crippling us, to be quibbling us, and particularly as the year's just getting going. So it'll be good today to unpack some of that, particularly, as you touched on, in the context of the church.
Yeah. Before we go into that, can I just ask a question? Because I'm curious, and we're all, shall we say, we're not young or youth anymore, let's be honest, right? So I'm just thinking back, you mentioned there about the fact that it's affecting our youth more than any other generation, which I thought was really interesting, because I don't remember feeling anxiety when I was a kid. And I wondered whether for you guys as well, I don't remember that being a part of my childhood. So I wondered what the change was and why it's our youth now that are feeling this sense of anxiety more than any other generation.
Isn't it fair to say that young people today have got access to so much more information, so much more news information, real time? Now, I remember in my teen years, I really didn't know what was going on in the world. You could see the news at 6 o'clock every night, but, now it's bombarding you, whether it be Facebook, whether it be Instagram, whether it be TikTok, whatever it happens to be, the media you use, you're bombarded by negative news. And that is bound to impact people and their anxiety. And so I can sort of understand that, younger people didn't have that sense of nothingness and relaxation and so forth. They're now bombarded all the time.
Yeah, that's so true, Des. And I think one of the things about anxiety is it's touched on COVID before, and I don't want to linger on that topic, but it's a little bit like that in the sense that it's contagious and it spreads. And it's easy to catch off others, particularly through technology events and the perceived effects of them, which I have no control. So it's asking something of me, it's telling me something, and that doesn't sound good, and I have no control of it. So that provides a sort of a worst of both worlds for young people in that sense. And I think it's very multifaceted. Having young people, kids who are in their 20s, early 20s, and knowing lots of their friends, I have a lot of hope for the younger generation and how we can keep getting alongside them and also learn from them as well. But also some of the things that they're dealing with are different and unique to what we perhaps had in our youth. As Des mentioned, we're probably out doing more things and just didn't have that access to access to see and hear about. And so the inputs that we have in our life are really important, aren't they? Like, well, what am I seeing, hearing, knowing about, interacting with?
Yes.
And this is where we need, the role of parents and key people in our lives, as well as myself. How do I regulate that? How do I regulate that diet, if you like, of what are those inputs that are coming into my mind, into my life, and be discerning about that? And you don't necessarily know how to do that when you're younger. You haven't developed that wisdom and perhaps life experience. You just haven't had it. Mm. So that's where I think, we all have a role to play.
One of the things we talked about, Nick, and I'm sure you'd agree, is, Tim and I are always saying for men, it's important that they have friends, colleagues, people around them that they can do life with. But sitting alongside that is getting the right people.
Yeah.
Get people who have got positive attitude, who can so positively into our lives and certainly correct us where we're wrong, but, be a positive influence in those around us. And that's key, isn't it?
Yeah, and also be a positive influence to model things, not perfectly, but well. Let's use the word in a healthy way. And also challenge us and call us out on things. And we are in a time where, let's be honest, we're at a time more than any of us know anyway, that where the capacity for one to become offended and have our feelings hurt is higher than ever. Mm. And so we don't like being called out, but if we're able to do that with people who are, let's say, safe, trusted, known, and have some life experience who can speak into our life, particularly when we're younger, that's a really good thing. So it's good to think about it for us at our age, who's speaking into my life, and also whose life am I speaking into?
Mm. Yeah.
And if the answer to those is a big fat zero, that's good for us to do something about on both fronts.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. I think the first, and you mentioned that's a good point, Des, that two things are, first, get some people in your life to have that. And if you don't, then this is a great year for you to build some relationships. But I think also, and I'm not trying to sow discord here, but to look at the people who are in your life and go, what do they sow into my life and what do I sow into theirs? Am I around people who are always negative, looking backwards? They always find the critical. And so when I'm with them, I actually come away feeling heavier and worse, as opposed to more positive and lighter. And, you know, not that we need to ditch all of our friendships, but to look at that and go, do I need to limit those sorts of people in my life? Because that is affecting my mental health. And I think that's a really important thing to do as we start the year. Bouncing off that, I want to just then quickly recap. We haven't gotten into the subject yet, but I think it's important for us just to quickly highlight again for people some things that might indicate that we might be carrying anxiety or struggling with anxiety. So what might indicate in our lives that we are having a struggle in this area?
Yeah, and it often starts in our thinking and shows up in our body. Mm. So someone who, you know, maybe that, particularly if you know, if you're known and you have people around it, it'll often be, am I noticing things in myself and are others noticing things in me? Like, have I stopped connecting and socializing as much? Am I withdrawing more? Are my sleeping habits affected? And by that, I don't just mean, you know, technology till 3 a.m. has something happened, or my thinking or an event changed such that my daily routine and rhythms, which you're still forming when you're younger and for all of us at different times and stages, particularly at the start of a new year, are they disrupted? And what I'm eating and how I'm eating, has it changed? Are there movements up or down in my mood? And so there's some of the things that we can pick up on. Am I focusing my thoughts on a certain thing and becoming increasingly focused on that in a negative way? Because, you know, what we stare at, we move towards, and we also tend to magnify and amplify it. So that's good if it's a good thing. But if it's a not so good thing, we don't want to be, you know, don't try this on the road. But if you stare at the car next to you, you will move towards it.
Yeah, yeah, don't do that on the road.
Definitely don't try that, particularly if you're driving now. But the premise of that holds true in our life as well, and we will tend to magnify it. So back to the point before, what am I hearing? What am I magnifying? And who's speaking into that? Because if we don't have anyone speaking into our lives, and I know I've been at stages in my life where I haven't and needed to do something about that, and I know there'd be people out there who are like that now. Let's not beat up on ourselves. It's about going, okay, what can I do about that? Allowing that to happen. Because if we're flying solo, and as guys, we can tend to do that a little bit more easily at times, a bit more naturally, if you like, we're not going to pick up as much as we would if someone was, say, noticing how we're going. Say, hey, how are you doing? I've noticed you're a bit more this or that. And that can feel confronting at times. And our first reaction might be to pull away a bit because it feels confronting, but it's actually a good thing where if we know them and we trust them because they care about us and want the best for us. So there's some of the signs and particularly some of the things that we can do about it.
Yeah.
Being known is a good thing. And as we'll talk about today, it's also messy.
It is, and it's confronting, right? Let's be honest. It is confronting to have those conversations. And we just want to say that up front as guys. You know, we've all been on this journey, and Des and I have our own backstories particularly, and learned the benefit of having friends who are close who we can be open and honest with. And it's a scary thing for guys to step into that space, but there is such a great sense of camaraderie, freedom, released on the other side of having honest conversations. Nick, I just want to quickly bounce off as we go to a break. One thing that we kind of touched on last year was also the the situations and the circumstances and the areas that we place ourselves, how they feed into our anxiety. We talked about the workplace, and we're going to come back in the second part of today and talk about anxiety in the church, which is interesting because a lot of us would immediately associate a church with a place of being peaceful and accepting, and yet that's not always the case for a bunch of different reasons, which we will explore in the second part of Momentum. MomentumAustralia.org. As we go to a break, our special guest is Nick Marks from AAFC, their website aafc.com.au. Stay tuned, we'll be back in just a tick.
This is Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. Find out more at MomentumAustralia.org.
Okay, well, welcome back to part two of this week's show. Tim and Des with you once again, and we've got Nick Marks from AAFC with us as we talk about anxiety and the church this week. Their website, aafc.com.au, and momentumaustralia.org, of course, our website. Bunch of resources on both of those. Log those down and check them out after the show. So we are talking about anxiety in the church. And Nick, I suppose before we launch into that, let's, as we did with workplace, right, workplace anxiety, this idea that we all kind of contribute to this feeling, or we can, this sense of anxiety within an area, and how that can become to some degree chronic if that's not dealt with within an organization where there's people all collectively feeling this sense. So can you just unpack that for us, explain that, how that might work and how that feeds off each other, etc., before we get into how that may affect us when we step into a church environment?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. It's good to have some of the definitions here, right, in that, you know, there's acute anxiety like we were just talking about, and how I might feel when I'm anxious, or my pulse quickens, or different things take place in my body from my thoughts and feelings and about the future. If that goes for, you know, more than 6 months or so, you can have what's diagnosed as a general anxiety disorder. When we speak about chronic anxiety, we're actually speaking about something a little bit different, where that chronic anxiety refers to how does anxiety move and operate between people as an emotional process in a system. Now, when I say system, what I mean is essentially two or more people. Because when we say system, we sometimes have a connotation of a thing, but a system is really two or more people. So it can happen in families, which is where this originated from in the work of Bowen in family systems theory, that anxiety as an emotional process will behave in a certain way and has certain effects. And they're not all bad, and they're really good to understand. So it can happen in a workplace, even in our culture, in a society, you can see these things taking place. And as we'll talk about today, in a church, it's important to know and understand it, because once we do that, we can name it. And if we name it, well, we can tame it.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, and it's really true. And that applies, I think, individually in a, you know, our individual anxiety or feelings of it, and in this chronic example. Chronic anxiety within a system. I like what Steve Cuss says, and he describes it in four different spaces, where anxiety can be the anxiety in me, the anxiety between me and you, so think two people, the anxiety, the space in the other, the anxiety in a person, so that's in them, and between others. So in me, between me and you, in the other, and between others. Have you ever gone into a meeting and there might be four people sitting in the meeting in a room or online, and you know something is off in that meeting? Something's been going on. Or you go to the proverbial water cooler and there's two people having a conversation that you know is not good.
Yeah.
And that's often a person who's carrying that anxiety for whatever reason and will seek to lower their anxiety by bringing another person or other people into it.
A bit like sharing the load sort of thing.
Yes, shares the load to lower it down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that can do that for them temporarily, but what it does is actually spreads it around.
Yeah.
So if you think of it back to it being really contagious, and a little bit, if you think of it like the air in a room, it's like the air quality, and it can increase almost to a point of combustion. And that room could be a living room in a family, a meeting room in an organization or in a church. And so that can influence the health of that system, depending how much that anxiety is moving between people, particularly where it remains unseen, if you like, and not talked about and not brought up onto the surface. Then it can become quite sinister. But there's things we can do about it. There's antidotes to this.
I'm debating whether to go straight into the antidotes. I'm just looking at that going, I love the way that you've painted that picture. And as you were saying that, I'm just kind of imagining myself, it's almost like we're able then to take a step back, because we can kind of see then that for what it is. And often in the moment, we don't. We kind of partner with it, or we run away from it because we're not sure. We don't like that feeling. But it's interesting there that you go, oh, if I can see that and label it for what it is, it's almost like I can separate that from either the person or from myself. And I love that, because then we can deal with it in a different way. So maybe we should go straight into antidotes, because we're going to apply this to the church system. Then I suppose, what are some key things in those areas that we can start reducing or negating some of that anxiety?
Very much what you just touched on is almost objectifying it to start with. So if we name it, we can tame it, as we talked about, because it operates in a certain way, because we're feeling those feelings strongly and personally, and that's where things can go awry, where it becomes interpersonal under the table with heightened feelings, and the anxiety is actually driving the bus. And so that, you know, standing back from it, particularly in our own self-awareness as we want to grow in it. Now, we can become increasingly self-aware from our own self-awareness to a point. And then we also need others to speak into our life, as we touched on before, because I will have a level of self-awareness that will reach a point, and then others will see things I don't. Mm-hmm. If you ask me if I have any blind spots, I'll tell you I don't. I've never seen them.
That's right.
But others have.
Yeah.
And I need them to do that. So that's really important. But that requires a healthy vulnerability. Mm. And being vulnerable, you know, can end up hurting. We've had times where we've been vulnerable and we've been hurt. And so we might make an agreement, say, I'm never going to do that again, ever. Mm. And we mean it when we say it. And so healthy vulnerability allows that the other to speak into it, because we know that anxiety moves around between others. The other one is our own differentiation. What I mean by that is, how do I grow more and more to become my true and full self? Not that I'll get there perfectly in this life. How do I grow to become my true and full self as much as I can, noting I need others to do that, and stay connected? Those two, being my true self and staying connected, is really differentiation. I mean, we see that in Christ's life. He was his full self and stayed connected. He loved people, had time for people. But if you tried to pin him down and say, we've got to go here, this is all happening over here, he goes, no, we're going this way. And so highly, completely differentiated. Mm. So that really helps, rather than trying to fix the other person, is focus on our own differentiation, which sounds counterintuitive, but it helps to improve the air quality in the room and help everybody lift, versus the lowering of it, as Des touched on, where you're seeking to lower your own anxiety by bringing others into it. It actually worsens the air quality and drags others down. Mm. And so there's some of the key things, and these things happen in churches. And the good news is the gospel and anxiety have a lot to do with each other, in the sense of introducing health into the system. And the gospel is the best thing for that. But how we practically outwork that is really important to understand in the context of anxiety in the system.
Mm. So why do you think, just talking on the church context, do you think people going to church feel anxious? I can remember the first time I went to church before I got saved, and I went to a particular church, and I walked in, and I was scared to go into that church. Yeah, like literally, I had high levels of anxiety. I mean, and so I mean, I guess that was an element of fear, this an element of the unknown, and I guess sort of them was broken down by the friendliness of people, the engagement of people, and so forth. And that's key, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great example. I remember the first time going when I was in my early 20s as well, and I decided I was going to go to a local church. And it wasn't far from my home, but I drove around the block three times before I went in and then sort of waited until they all went in and the service started, and then went in. Funny story on the side of it, the first guy that greeted me when I went in came up, said, "G'day, I'm Daz," and shook my hand. Fast forward 18 months later, he was the best man at my wedding.
Oh, there you go.
So sometimes our anxiety, it can be a really good thing. You know, if we see a lion, our anxiety tells us to run from it. So that's a good thing, and stepping into new situations can really get the pulse quickening. Yeah. And then it's if it continues on from that,
yes,
it can become debilitating. Or we've had a past experience that was very negative or even maybe traumatic.
Yeah.
And that gets into our story, which we tell ourselves, which becomes the script for the anticipated future. Well, if I that happened then, if I do that again, that'll happen. Therefore, I won't do it.
Yeah.
You know, so we've all done that, but we can miss out on, you know, good things ahead for us, good things that 2024 holds based on that story that we're telling ourselves. And so when it comes to the church, I mean, let me say I love the church. And no, there's no criticism here. The ecclesia, the church, is the light of the world. And it's made up of people. And as we talked about at the start, us people, we're messy.
Yeah.
And among other things, the church, it's a lot of different things, but it's also a system. There's people, two or more people. It's a system. And understanding how this can behave in certain ways can actually be a bit of a reprieve for us, because we often take things in anxious situations or when it's moving in the system very personally, as I said before. And to know that it's happening in a systemic way, as I like to say, once you see this, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
So that helps you to understand how this works. And, you know, people might say, well, you know, how could they treat me like that? Or I've worked so hard here. I've volunteered here for years. And how did that happen? Isn't this supposed to be the place where this doesn't happen? And it can be misdiagnosed, and it's actually often a systemic dynamic where the anxiety is moving in the system, which is really driving the bus, and take it very personally, which can speak back into those past situations. Might be where I was rejected when I was younger and I didn't get invited into something that's happening in the church, or and that I start telling that story of, yep, here it is again. I've been left out, you know, I've been kicked to the curb. And if we don't understand how anxiety is working there, perhaps our family of origin, how do we handle conflict or rejection or difficult situations? If we haven't been coached and discipled and parented well, even in that, that story will kick in and start to be the dominant narrative, and we can start to see ourselves as victims.
Wow, there's so much in there. But I just wanted to go back a step. You guys both talked about your first experience in church. And I suppose to some degree, it makes sense that there would be anxiety because you didn't know what you were to expect, right? So that's obvious. Let's move on then to go, like you said, Nick, we're in a church, for example, right? And do you think some of that anxiety once we're in a church is partly because we are expected to some degree as Christians to be a certain way, to act a certain way, to talk a certain way,
to dress a certain way?
Not that to dress a certain way, right? Yeah. Not that we have to perform, but do you think some of that is, all you know, for between 10 and 11:30 on the Sunday morning, I've got to be somebody that I'm not, or somebody that I feel like is going to get approval from people in church rather than the real me? Does that make sense?
It does, very much so. And you're both touching on really key things. So I'll get excited about this, so just cut me off at any time.
Okay.
We know that the world runs on the performance and reward cycle.
Yes.
And we're all, to some degree, products of our times and culture. And so the performance and reward cycle operates in our mindsets and motivations, and in churches as well at times, where we're rewarded or liked or affirmed, and might even get our identity about what outcomes or what we do. And so our false self, the self where, you know, I'm at the center and I'm in charge and it's about me, that my false self loves the performance and reward cycle, but it's a false love that doesn't really love us back. And you see this in the Gospels as well, where a more extreme example is, think of Jesus taking the Pharisees to task over and over about this. You know, you brood of vipers, you hypocrites, which means actors. The Pharisees were all about, this is taken to the nth degree, were all about performance and reward, and were very anxious, and they would have filled the system back then with anxiety, among other things. So performing all the right actions and looking good and looking prestigious, that's a treadmill that does a couple of things. It's highly anxiety generating. It can certainly lead to burnout. And burnout isn't necessarily I've got too much on and it's emptying me. It's more that I'm coming at life and work from a place of emptiness. Mm. And perhaps, you know, there's people listening there that have experienced that. I know I have at times. We can bend second order priorities to become first order priorities. So bums, buildings, and budgets. Now, they're not unimportant things. They're important things, but they're not the highest order priorities. And these things, and again, thinking about our past and our family of origin and how we do relationships and those sorts of things, can add a pressure to perform and conform, which can become a cultural dynamic in an organization or a church or a family or whatever it might be. I mean, you see this in families all the time is, you know, well, my family were all high achievers and they did this and they got that and they were all did. And, you know, I just felt like I should go in and study that as well.
Mm.
And that's a very common dynamic that can happen in a family and organization. Any of us have worked in the corporate sector would have felt this. Mm. And it can get into the church because we're all products to some degree of our culture. So it's not a criticism, it's coming at it from an observation.
Mm.
And so then again, the anxiety works in a certain way. And I said before, if we reject it in a certain way, I mean, you might have a pastor or a minister who's, for whatever reason, might be operating in isolation, is finding it hard to connect with others and doesn't have other men, for example, at close quarters that they can confide in and share. So they might end up a bit isolated and lonely, which again is quite anxiety producing. And so we can see this playing out in lots of different ways.
Mm.
Then receive it in a way that is very personal and
right
about us, when in fact a lot of this, not all of it, but a lot of this is working in a systemic way. And once we understand and see that, we can all, hopefully most of us, can start to address it. So if I give you an example of myself, when I'm anxious for whatever reason and I bring that into the system, I get more controlling, more driven. I expect more of people, you know, in brackets, they should be more like I am. Or I might go quiet and brood over things. Either way, it comes out in unhealthy ways. So I do this too. The difference is, you know, fast forwarding to now is I'm only by, you know, learning and growing over time, and I'm proof if I can do this, anyone can, is that allowing others to call me out on that. So the best scenarios in our family or in our workplace, at church with our brothers and sisters in Christ, they can see it in us and recognize it and ask those questions around how you're doing. You seem a bit anxious. I've noticed you're getting much more focused and driven and et cetera, the hallmark things that I do when I get this level of anxiety. And then we can call each other out on it in a really good way. And we can even make light of it. And straight away, the air quality can improve versus it becoming toxic or combustible because no one's talking about this in the room. It's all happening outside.
I mean, there's so much in that, but I want to bounce off that because there'll be people who, and myself for one, right? Because of my upbringing, I don't really want to go into that too much, but my mom tended towards things being my fault, right? So sometimes I can carry that. And so I suppose I wanted you to just speak on then in a church environment to go, how do we know that the environment is relatively healthy versus it's us that's getting triggered? So because some of us will walk into that and then if it's a poor environment, you know, and some of us have had this experience in church, we'll be made to feel that it's our problem, that there's undealt stuff with us, that it's bringing stuff up, we're manifesting, whatever it may be, that the church is fine, that it's actually you that's the problem. And some people will wear that and not question that and then go and beat themselves up about it. So how do we know the difference then between, yeah, I'm getting triggered in this space, but I know the space is healthy versus I'm getting triggered because I'm in an unhealthy environment?
Yeah, it's a great point. It's not black and white. There's a lot of gray.
Yeah.
And the best thing that can happen in any organization, a family, in a church, is that the leadership are aware of this and this dynamic and as best we can, perfectly, leading by example in having these conversations. Because if it's led from, and I'll use the word top, sounds very hierarchical, but if it's led from the leadership and it then becomes a cultural dynamic, then you actually start to achieve more of a critical mass. Whenever you develop a language for something, it starts to spread around in a good or not so good way. In this case, it can be very good to develop some language around this. And you can then have those conversations because it can be a both and. It can be something that's systemic, that's happening, that's unhealthy, and the person who has blown that out of proportion and, you know, become dysregulated and will benefit from someone getting alongside them to help them gain some context and understanding and lower it all down in a healthy way over time. And sure, there are definitely examples where it is the individual who has false or unmet unrealistic unmet expectations that no matter what you do, you're not going to be able to help them or meet those expectations. But at least if you come to understand, you can't even try to do that until you know what they are. And that's where often in this case, nothing said over here and nothing said over here and never the twain shall meet. So you have a systemic issue going on with anxiety and the person carrying it in themselves, and there's no conversation going on to at least try to bring about some reconciliation or understanding or to clear the air in the room. And it's naming it that helps tame it. Does that always work? No, sometimes it just doesn't. And you just, you know, agree to disagree, or you may even decide to part ways, but you can do that in a way where you finish well and you have a level of understanding versus it never being spoken about and just the heightened feelings and emotions that are associated with it. And someone, you know, goes out the door in an unfortunate or in an unhealthy way. And that does happen from time to time. And there's things that you can't always do about that. But majority of the time, you can do something about this. And that's, let me say one other thing. I think we are in a time, and just on your point, Tim, is we're in a culture that encourages and cultivates the individual as the autonomous center of their own life. And I think there's outworkings of this, which we, you know, need to be increasingly aware of, where we've exchanged, you know, somewhere along the line that the transcendent for the imminent, or that we're actually made, and I'm talking about culture, that we're made in the image of God to, well, I'm the center of my own universe. There's real consequences to that, to people's identity. We see that becoming more of a choose your own adventure identity. It has real consequences to hope and love. And we see people becoming increasingly fragile and lower in their resilience levels, and the ability for people's feelings to be hurt and to take offense to things has increased. Mm. And so, again, not understanding how this dynamic works, we can all be sort of banging into each other without the awareness of that there are these dynamics at play. I would come back to the growing in our understanding of it can at least give us a much better opportunity to have real conversations, for discipleship to take place in these areas in our own lives. That's why I think small groups and connections in church are so important. I love what C.S. Lewis said, by myself, I'm not large enough to call the whole man into activity. My selfhood, my true self, can't be achieved by myself living from my false self. As uncomfortable and challenging as it is, and sometimes it's really, really hard and awkward, I really need family and my other mates to love me, to hang out with me, at times call me out on things. And I think that's where transformation can really then, and growth can really take place, because trauma always happens in relationship. But the good news is, and it is good news, healing always happens and transformation always happens in relationship, not when I'm up on a mountaintop by myself. Doesn't mean it can't, but it usually doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. Man, there's so much in today's show. We've let it run a little over time as well, because there was so much in that. And in some ways, we've only just scratched the surface. We might come back and do a second show on anxiety in the church. Our special guest has been Nick Marks from AAFC. I'm going to point you to their website once again, aafc.com.au. And of course, this has been Momentum with Tim and Des, and our website is momentumaustralia.org. Nick and Des, what a great chat. Yeah, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me on, guys. I said I get excited about this, but I appreciate the opportunity to share with you, and hope it's been of some help to your listeners out there. So thank you.
You've been listening to Momentum, a show that helps men succeed in life. For more information or to hear this week's show again, go to momentumaustralia.org. You can also access a whole range of resources to help you on your journey, and to get in touch with the team at momentumaustralia.org. Until next time, keep moving forward with Momentum.